The year was 2019. The horse was Maximum Security, and the race was the famous Kentucky Derby. As the thunderous hooves pounded against the track at Churchill Downs, the crowd erupted in a deafening roar. As the horses rounded the final turn, the magnificent thoroughbred surged towards the finish line. Maximum Security pulled ahead with one massive last effort and heaved himself and his jockey across the finish line. But just as the cheers reached a crescendo, the unthinkable happened. The video replay revealed a controversial interference that left the outcome hanging in the balance. With tension soaring and the fate of the race in question, who was crowned the victor of 2019's Kentucky Derby? Hey everyone, welcome to Sorta Sophisticated, a podcast rooted in becoming more cultured and curious, where we endeavor to suspend judgment, expand our worldview, and learn to appreciate varying perspectives and values.
But really, it's a show where we hope to enlighten anyone who cares on topics that might make them more interesting and well-versed humans, and just dangerous enough to hold their own in this sophisticated world. Well, sort of.
I'm your host, Peter, here with my co-host, producer, director, engineer, artist, extraordinaire, Amanda. So get ready to saddle up for an exhilarating ride through the thrilling world of horse racing. Join us as we dive deep today into the legendary Triple Crown series, exploring the history, drama, and triumphs behind this prestigious championship. From the iconic races at Churchill Downs to the heart-pounding finishes at Belmont Park, our goal is to make you just smart enough to hold your own out on the racetrack. Our word of the day today is effluvium. Effluvium. Our challenge is to work this word into the podcast somewhere and make it kind of seem like we meant to.
And I do think that we need a definition, please.
Of effluvium? Yeah. Who doesn't know effluvium?
I mean, it kind of sounds like it's a little bit like it should came out of a Harry Potter or something.
It came out of a Harry, but not a Potter. Maybe
oh,
a hairy butt.
Oh, dear.
Effluvium is a smelly gas, vapor, or exhalation.
So like a fart?
I mean, kind of like a fart, yeah. But I guess like half the smelly part of the fart. Like, not the whole fart.
But what is a fart anyways? Isn't it just the smell? So it's all effluvium. It's a verb and a noun.
This could be a podcast all by itself. I think the fart is like the whole act of farting, like the squeezing of the cheeks and everything. I don't think it's just the smell. But anyway, you get the idea.
All right. Whatever. I got it. I think this is going to be way too easy.
I agree. Right? Because we got horses. We got farts. It's going to be easy.
But can we pause for a second?
Pause.
First of all, what the heck is Churchill Downs or Belmont Park? I feel like I need to know these places.
You totally should know these
for
places.
For us to move forward.
Right. Well, if you're not into horse racing, you might not know. But we'll get to that for sure. But basically, they're the most iconic horse racing venues in all of the United States. So yeah, I don't want to spoil anything. Let's keep going.
So give me a little brief history of this Triple Crown thing for those of us that have no idea what's going on or have never actually been to a horse race.
All right. Let's launch the Triple Crown. In American horse racing, it's technically the championship title attributed to the three-year-old horse.
But can they be older than three? Sorry, you were very specific at three.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know that either. I don't think they can be older than three because then they're not good enough. Like prime age is three. They have to be at least three because if they're younger than three, they're not mature enough. And if they're older than three, then they're like old fogies. So three is like...
bread and butter.
Yeah. That is like, I'm going to be the thoroughbred horse of all time. Anyway. So it's the championship title attributed to the three-year-old winning three specific races. The Kentucky Derby at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. The Preakness Stakes at Pimlico Park in Baltimore, Maryland. And the Belmont Stakes at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York. All in the same single horse racing season.
Well, if that's not confusing. Belmont in Elmont.
Yeah, it is a little weird. I don't know why they do that, but yes, it's Belmont Park. That's the racetrack in Elmont, New York.
Maybe they're going for alliteration.
They were doing something. I don't know. It all comes from England. Probably somewhere, I'm assuming. Yeah. Anyway, so I guess the idea of like why it started was probably from egos. I guess it's a competition, so why not? Like I'm making that part up. I think it was to showcase the top talent in horse racing and like the owners, the trainers, the jockeys, et cetera, et cetera. I Googled it. I couldn't find a specific reason. So I'm going with it's egos, right? People want to race. People want to win, right? So anyway, it's considered the most coveted and celebrated achievement in all of sports because it's so hard to pull off. Since 1875, the first year that it technically started, and I will explain all that later, only 13 horses have accomplished the feat. The feat? The hoof. All right. Well, so anyway, it starts as a copycat inspired by the races that had already been running in the UK for like 100 years before that. And those races were called the 2000 Guinea Stakes, the Epsom Derby, and the St. Leger Stakes. Fun fact, the St. Leger started running in 1776, while America was still fighting for their lives against the British, and they're over there racing fucking horses already in 1776. Anyway, so it takes about 100 years for us to get organized, because up until 1875, we just had like a bunch of independent horse races running in their respective states, mostly controlled by the Easterners, like the 13 colonies and stuff. But by the Civil War, everything sort of changed. And by the end of that, some folks had the idea to start copycatting the whole thing from UK to America. So it all starts in 1875 with this guy, Meriwether Lewis Clark Jr., the founder of Churchill Downs and home to the Kentucky Derby.
And is this the Lewis and Clark? Any relation to the OG Lewis and Clark?
Yes, absolutely relation. So grandson, right? Meriwether Lewis Clark was a grandson of William Clark, who, along with Meriwether Lewis, co-led the expedition of the North American West after the Louisiana Purchase. Yes.
But they had a kid? I'm so confused.
No, they can't have a kid. Not back then, they couldn't have a kid. Nowadays, they probably could have a kid. Back then, they didn't have a kid. So William Clark had the kid with some beautiful woman who was his wife or mistress, and then was like, dude, my homeboy's name is Meriwether Lewis, so I got to throw that name
because
in.
Because they were two guys. Yeah. See, history's important.
Yes, very important. Oh, so Meriwether Clark, the grandson, is the one
as
who started.
As a nod to.
Churchill Downs. Anyway, yeah, so he had this idea to try to promote this Triple Crown centered around the Kentucky Derby at his Churchill Downs venue. But the eastern states, mainly New York, Baltimore, right, Maryland, didn't think the race out west in Kentucky was like good enough for them, because it's sort of like a I don't want to say a national pride thing then, but at that point, enough of a pride thing, like per states. We had states then. It was 1875 for crying out loud. Yes. So they didn't want to they couldn't get bothered by Kentucky having a race. So super weird. But anyway, the next 50 years goes by and it's mostly ignored, because these race purists said it was too early in the racing season for these three-year-olds to race. So you remember the whole three-year-old thing, right? So the Kentucky Derby, the only way that Meriwether Lewis Clark was getting any sort of notoriety was he had to race his race a little early. So his race was the first week in May, and that was a super young three-year-old to come into the racing prime. So it wasn't really catching on so much, because they wanted three-year-olds that were like middle-of-the-year three-year-olds. But then the Kentucky Derby wasn't getting notoriety because the other races were more prominent, so he had to move his race up.
Got it.
Makes sense?
And that's what is coming in just a few weeks.
Yes. That's coming on the first weekend of May. People, it's happening. All right. So it wasn't really until some dude named Charles Hatton, a columnist for the Daily Racing Form, began referring to the idea of a triple crown in reference to a horse named Gallant Fox, the winner of the three races in the 1930s, that the term even started catching on. Yes, he actually did run in the Kentucky Derby in 1930. And then more and more owners and trainers began to prepare sort of specifically for these three races. By the 1940s, everyone in the racing community was using the term, and the Triple Crown title was formally proclaimed in December 1950 at the annual awards dinner of the Thoroughbred Racing Association in New York.
So just to make sure we're all tracking along here, Pete, the Triple Crown is just the winner of these three races.
Yes. And if I haven't sort of explained it already, nobody decided in 1875 that there was a Triple Crown. Like, it didn't exist. It really wasn't until Charles Hatton in 1930s said, oh, we got a Triple Crown, Triple Crown. People were like, oh, what's that? That's so cool. Up until that point, Meriwether Lewis was just trying to promote his race, and Belmont Park was a super famous race course, and so was the Preakness at Pimlico. So it was just sort of all happening. And then someone's like, oh, Triple Crown, this is so cool. Okay. And then the 1940s goes by and people are like, oh, that's so cool. They won those three races again. And so really,
it just
in
became
19,
a perfect it, storm.
Yes. And then in 1950, you're like, okay, this is a thing and we're going to name it Triple Crown. And by the way, we know that Gallant Fox won it in 1930. So he's the first, but not really.
Oh.
They go back and they check their records and realized actually in 1919, a horse named Sir Barton did it first, and so he was posthumously, is that a word, posthumously, or I guess in this case, posthorsuously?
Stop it.
I was awarded sort of the first winner, Sir Barton, but again, there was no name for it at the time. So ultimately, this idea of the Triple Crown was established finally to celebrate the excellence of the horse racing and promote competition, create a prestigious goal for owners and trainers and jockeys, And since has become, like I said, one of the most coveted accomplishments in the world of horse racing.
So before we get too much farther in there, again, I don't know anything about horse racing. Can we go over some of the lingo?
You don't know any lingo?
I mean, I don't think so. Here, we'll be like a test, and I'll let you know if I know anything.
Nothing. Furlong? Post position?
Closest to the post? Kind of like closest to the pin in golf?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Silks? Okay. All right, let's go. We'll go quick. We'll buzz through this. Post position. That refers to the starting gate from which the horse begins the race. Lower number post positions are closer to the inside rail. Higher number post positions, farther outside.
All right, but how do you get the closest spot?
I had to look that up. It's a lottery. That's it. Totally simple. And you don't want the closest spot. You really want, like, the second or third or fourth spot. Because the closest spot, you get pinned in on the rail. If other horses come out faster than you, you get stuck. Horse one, two, maybe three. If you're out on the outside, 20, 17, 18, 19, 20, you have so
too
much
far.
Too far. So you sort of really, you don't really want 10. That's still too far out. You sort of want, let's call it four or five.
So luck of the draw.
Yeah. Literally luck of the draw. They don't go by best horse. They don't go anything. Yeah. Luck of the draw. Totally.
That's crazy.
All right. Then you got the jockey. Everybody knows the jockey. I hope he's the rider of the horse to the really small in stature people that don't weigh a lot, that are awesome and ride on top of the horse.
Are they always short?
They are. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Okay. Yes, you want to keep the weight down, right? Because then you have the best chance of winning. So they're not quite Oompa Loompa sized, but they're generally small-ish of smaller stature. And then you got the trainer, of course, who is a totally different than the jockey. He's the person responsible to train the horse, like feed him their vegan diet, make sure he cleans their nails and brushes their teeth and
overall
well-being. Then you got the silks. Those are the jackets or the uniforms worn by the horse and the jockey, right? So you know what color they're wearing. So as they're going around the track, you're like, crap, I'm supposed to be looking at the purple and gold one because that's the one I'm rooting for. You'll hear different terms around track conditions, like the racing surface of the track. Sometimes it's on grass, sometimes it's on dirt. So you'll hear things like the track is fast today, or it's muddy today, or it's sloppy, right? That gets a little sophisticated for me, and we're only being sort of sophisticated. We're not being too sophisticated on this
podcast.
So
not too much. Not too much.
Let's not go that far. And then you have a furlong, which is a unit of distance in horse racing, equivalent to 1/8 of a mile, which is about 220 yards.
Is this how they measured the arc?
What the hell does that have to do with horse racing? The arc? Like the arc? Like Noah's Ark? I don't think so. I think furlong comes from furrow long, F-U-R-R-O-W, long. It's the length of a medieval field that could be plowed by an ox without, and it was about 1/8 of a mile before the ox got tired. So I think they use it in horse racing because it's a really good distance to judge the top speed of a horse. Sort of like humans with the 100-meter dash. That's how we know how fast we possibly can run. If you start going 200 meters, 300 meters, you start to slow down a bit. So that's the idea of a furlong. Races are either in furlongs or in miles. And then, of course, the last one would be paddock, which is the area where the horses are saddled and paraded before being taken onto the track, right? It's the area where they all hang out together.
But can you imagine the effluvium? I told you, it was going to be way too easy. But seriously, though, in the paddock area, there has to be.
There's a lot of effluvium. So I went down to Del Mar Racetrack recently. I went to, you should go to the paddock area. It's totally awesome to see. It's fun to hang out in. And yes, there's a lot of effluvium, for sure. I'm gonna lie. Even from the girl horses.
Oh.
Who I didn't think ever farted, but they did.
SPS.
What?
The arc was 0.09 of a mile, or furlong is 0.12 of a mile. So it could have been that. Could have been the measurement.
Do they measure arcs? No. I thought it was cubits. It was cubits. It was cubits. Oh, there we go. All right, good. Good little biblical reference there. All right, so then you have sort of the gambling vocab, right? We did the other lingo, so we'll do some gambling quick. So you have handicap, which is the weights that the horses wear over them to make them sort of equal in their chances of winning, right? So it's like sandbags. They got to put sandbags on them.
Do they do this in all races?
They don't do it in all races. They do it in some races, and they don't do it in the three main ones for the Triple Crown. They do
because
not.
That's just like a showcase of best horses.
Best horses, yes. But yeah, otherwise it could get super not fun because you're just one horse is always one. Yes. You have the purse, which is the total prize money. It's not the satchel that women wear, right? It's not a man purse or anything like that. That's just the purse is the amount of money you win. Then you have bets. So you could place a win bet or a place bet or a show bet. The win bet is you're betting on a horse to finish first.
Makes sense. Who's going to win?
Absolutely. You have the place bet, which is the horse will finish either first or second.
So specifying what place
they're going to win? No, it's actually getting easier. So he can come in top one. He or she can come in first or second. And then you have the show bet, which the horse can just finish in the top one, two, or three. So if you have a horse like Secretariat, you're like, hey, I'm gonna do a show bet. All he has to do is come in the top three and you win. You just win less money if it's the show bet.
All right.
Versus the place bet versus the win bet.
More specificity.
More money, more risk goes with depending on where you want to do this. And then there's this thing called the trifecta, which is super hard, but you want to predict the first three finishers in the exact order. So if you're like, oh, I'm going to put money on Secretariat and then Seabiscuit and then Gallant Fox, they didn't all race together. Don't get me wrong. But like in this order, boom, boom, boom. Oh my God. You could win like a shit ton of money. Yeah.
All right. Don't think I'm ever going to win that type of money, but.
But you should bet. It's fun. So you should, if you go to the racetrack and you bet on show all the time, just be like, oh, I'm just going to bet on show, blah, 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 this horse. Or I'm going to bet on show, that horse. Because you get into it, it's fun, you watch, and then you're like, oh, all they have to do is finish in the top three. So it's a super easy, fun, low bet to get in and have fun when you're at a horse racing event.
And to enjoy it.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So tell me a little bit more then about these races, because maybe one day I'll go.
Let's go. We got to go to the Kentucky Derby. You got your hat?
I mean, I'll make one. Can I make one?
No, you can't make a hat. You got to be,
Do you have a bowler hat?
You know, we need a big hat.
I get a big hat. You get a bowler hat.
All right, I'll get a bowler hat?
Yeah.
Right, they have hats at the Kentucky Derby. We'll talk about that. All right. So the Kentucky Derby, referred to as the Run for the Roses or the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. It's the horse racing event held annually on the first Saturday in May at Churchill Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. Already said all that. The Derby is the longest running continuous sporting event in United States history. It dates back all the way to 1875. And it represents the first leg or race of the Triple Crown series. Because it's the first leg, now that we know that means race, I'm just going to say leg from now on, it draws all the top horses, jockeys, and trainers from around the world. It's never not been run. Literally from 1875 to, holy crap, guys, we are coming up on the 150th year of the Kentucky Derby.
That's crazy.
Mark your calendar. It's a milestone year. That's a big feat all by itself. It's been run through wars, famine, influenza epidemic in the 1915s, COVID, it's always been run. It's a mile and a quarter race that usually takes a little over 2 minutes. Colts and geldings, boy horses.
Why are there two names?
What?
Why are there two names?
Why? What do you mean? What are there two names?
Well, you said a colt and a gelding, horses.
Colts have balls. Geldings no longer have balls. To calm them down, I think. They're neutered.
Intriguing.
They're neutered.
Intriguing.
Yes. So they carry a 126-pound handicap, and fillies, girl horses, carry 121 pounds. I know you asked me earlier about handicaps and said, wait a second, what's happening? And I said they don't handicap. In this race, they all carry the same weight, 126 or 121. So technically, it's not a handicap.
Plus rider?
It's not different weights.
Is that plus the rider?
No, that like includes rider.
So they're making it even based off
of like a rider will weigh like 110 pounds. And then if it's a male horse, then you have to put in an extra 16. If the rider's 110 pounds on a female horse, they only put in an extra 11. They have to even out the rider's weight distribution on horses.
To make it equal.
Yes. Stuff. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The field, or the number of horses that can run, has been limited to 20 horses since 1975. Otherwise, it gets too big and way too out of control.
But how big is out of control?
I think out of control was like 23 or 25 horses up till 1975.
Oh,
and if you've ever seen a Kentucky Derby with 20 horses, it is already insane. The track is so wide. Like the horse that's number 20, I don't know, maybe it's won before, but like I don't think it has a chance. It's so far on the outside. It's crazy. There's a lot of bumping and grinding sort of at the beginning of the race. It's terrible. So 20, I personally think 20 is already way too many. Anyway, one of the most iconic traditions of the Derby itself is the Garland of Roses. The whole idea of the Run for the Roses, it's awarded to the winning horse in the winner's circle, and it's draped over the horse like a dress. It's gorgeous. And speaking of fashion, another great tradition is that the spectators in attendance usually go all out and don extravagant hats and wildly colorful attire. The more gaudy, the better. It's a Milner's wet dream.
But what's a Milner? And how do you know about their dreams? I'm just saying.
Okay. A hat maker. You didn't know
what? What? No. If you would have asked me, I would have put it like a...
Like, that's how they stay in
business. Somebody who had a mill.
I would guess that's why they stay in business, because of the Kentucky Derby. Totally.
I've never owned a hat that was handcrafted by a milliner.
You probably have, and you just don't know it. Well, no, they're probably made in factories. Good point.
Hey, but Pete, did you know that hats were good luck? And the bigger the hat, the bigger the luck, and that's why they had big hats?
No, I did not know that. I thought it was just a stupid extravaganza. Well, that makes way more sense now, because if you go watch, some of these hats are massive if you watch this on television.
It's like the showpiece,
right? Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And of course, there has to be an official drink, right? So the official drink of the Kentucky Derby is?
Let me guess. What? Bourbon? Kentucky?
You're close. Very close. It's a mint julep, which is made with bourbon. And then you add the sugar, the mint, and of course, crushed ice.
Okay.
So you're very close.
So the liquor in it.
And it's super delish, the mint julep.
How can you go wrong with those ingredients?
You can't. They're fantastic together.
All right. So if I sum it all up here, and to make sure that I'm understanding correctly, the Kentucky Derby is the first leg of the Triple Crown.
Yes.
Anyone who's anyone goes to it.
Yes.
You wear a ridiculous hat.
You got to.
Crazy outfit.
Mm-hmm.
You get smashed on mint juleps. And it's all for just 2 minutes of racing. Just two.
It is. But you get smashed for like 3 hours. That's why you have to go to the paddock first and smell all the effluvium, because you want to sort of take it all in, have a lot of mint juleps, hang out, talk fashion, talk about your hats, have fun, then watch 2 minutes.
More of a social gathering.
Oh my God, yes.
Beforehand.
Yes.
Okay. And then just to clarify, the Kentucky Derby is the overall concept of races, but is it like a leg?
Yes, it's the first leg. Remember, that was the whole idea. It is the first race or the first leg of the Triple Crown. The Triple Crown is three races, so we're going to say leg one, leg two, and leg three.
Perfect. Yep. Okay, so then what's next? What's leg two?
Beautiful. All right, next is the Preakness Stakes. Stakes is another word for race money, not like steaks that you eat, like money steaks. If you're cool, this one's referred to as the Run for the Black-Eyed Susans. This is the second race or leg in the Triple Crown series, held at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore, Maryland.
But what are black-eyed Susans?
Black-eyed Susans are the state flower of Maryland. They look like a super small sunflower, like a miniature sunflower, and a bunch of them get draped over the winning horse at the end of...
So every race has its own special flower.
It does.
Okay.
Don't spoil it, but there is one for the Belmont. Yes. This race was actually established 2 years earlier than the Kentucky Derby in 1873, but... it wasn't continuous. It didn't race every year because of financial problems in the late 1800s. And then it was moved actually a little while in the 1900s, so it wasn't even at Pimlico. And it finally settled down in Baltimore, Maryland at Pimlico in 1909. So even though it was an earlier race, it's not the longest running race in history.
Wasn't as successful.
Right. It was important, but yeah, moved a little. Look, a lot of these things were sort of like started back in the day, literally 13 colonies. We start America. We start doing this, starting that. They have some funding, right? The Federalists are fighting with the, what was it then? The Republicans and the Federalists? I don't even remember, but you know, yeah. So whatever.
I mean, part of it.
Shoestring budget. You needed Alexander Hamilton to like, you know, bring the nation together.
I'm just saying, Meriwether Clark Lewis.
Yeah. Junior.
Should get some props.
Junior. Right.
Junior.
Should totally get some props. Yes. He was a big promoter. Big promoter. Totally. All right. Anyway. So the Preakness is famous for this infield fest. It's like a massive festival like Coachella that takes place like in the middle of the racetrack, featuring live music, food, drinks. It's super awesome. It's the best place to be when you're at Pimlico.
And I kind of feel like, or I guess I envision, it's a lot like how the waste management was this year.
Oh, dude, that golf thing
in
wherever, Arizona? Yes, an absolute shit fest.
Okay.
Yes, totally, yeah. Another cool little fun fact. As soon as the Preakness winner is declared official, a painter actually, literally, this is as soon as the race ends and the horse is being brought into the winner's circle, a painter climbs the ladder to the top of the old clubhouse, which is a certain spot at Pimlico Racetrack, and paints the colors of the victorious owner's silks to the horse and rider on the weather vane atop the old clubhouse, like on that infield structure. It's literally happening while they're draping the black-eyed Susans over the horse, so it stays up there for a whole year on the weather vane.
Because it got our race past history, and they got to declare the new winner.
And I think that's super cool.
Amazing.
And so then, again, it's more fun because you're drinking, you're having fun, you're watching it happen. It's a super cool tradition. Anyway, of course, there's an official cocktail. It's called the Black-Eyed Susan, and it's made with vodka, St. Germain liquor, pineapple, lime, and orange juice.
I mean, that also sounds tasty.
It's a diabetic's dream. All right, so finally we have the Belmont Stakes, referred to as the Test of the Champion, because that's the last leg, or the Run for the Carnations. There's your flower, derived from the blanket of white carnations traditionally draped over the winning horse. It's the oldest and longest leg of the Triple Crown Series. It's held annually, we said, at Belmont Park in, yes, of course, Elmont, New York. This one was established in 1867, earliest race, but again, wasn't continuously raced. It's renowned for its grueling 1.5-mile distance. I say grueling because that's one of the longer horse races. They're usually a mile. Some of them are even under a mile. So 1.5 is a long one for horses. It totally tests the stamina of the jockey and the horse, and it's the last of the season, so they're exhausted generally. It's a tough one for sure. That's why this Triple Crown thing is important.
It's kind of like doubling down.
Oh, totally.
Like how long can you go for?
Right.
And it's the longest
one. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's steeped in history and features iconic landmarks like the Belmont Park Tower and the infield Belmont Park Fountain. And of course, it has to have an official cocktail. The official cocktail of the race is the Belmont Jewel. This one's a mix of bourbon, love the bourbon, lemonade, and pomegranate juice. Perfect for a summer horse race.
All right. So let's see if I got this then. Each race has its own flower crown, whether it be the roses, black-eyed Susans, or carnations. And they get their own cocktail.
Got to have your cocktail.
So the Mint Julep, the Black-Eyed Susan, and the Belmont Jewel. And I get to wear a fancy hat.
Oh, a big-ass fancy
all
hat,
right,
mama.
So count me in.
Let's
count
go. Me in. Right. So we're going to all three this year?
Maybe.
Come
I
on.
I mean, we gotta get there in a few days, so I don't know.
I need to make some Razzies. I'm guessing this thing is sold out. I think it's over 100,000 people, Kentucky Derby.
No way.
Holds. Yeah, it's like 155,000 or something.
That's
I haven't
insane.
Looked it up. But yeah, it's big. Yeah.
Well, if we're going to go to these races, I feel like you need to maybe tell me about the winners, man. Like, and really just the horses, because who even really cares about the jockeys?
The 13 winners?
I mean, maybe they do. Jockeys are important. I'm not saying that they're not. But the horses, like.
Let's go.
Who
Let's
are
go
these
13.
Winners?
Let's go 13, right? Unlucky 13. All right. So we've got the first one in 1919, right? Sir Barton. They didn't give it to him till later, but that remember that one. Gallant Fox in 1930. He was the first one recognized by that Charles Hatton guy who coined the actual term Triple Crown. So then the 30s and 40s have a lot, right? So Omaha is in 1935, then War Admiral in 37.
But where's Seabiscuit?
See what?
Seabiscuit.
Nah, not Seabiscuit. Seabiscuit didn't start getting good till he was older. Seabiscuit was so rare. He was incredible. He didn't start racing good till he was 4 years old, and people were like so confused by it, so he didn't race in any of these races, even though he was fucking amazing.
Because he was too old. He was past his prime?
People thought he was too old. He just didn't hit his prime till later. He was an absolute animal anomaly. It was
crazy.
Insane. Yes. Anyway, highly, highly suggest reading the book Seabiscuit. Amazing. Awesome. Watch the movie. Anyway. All right. Then you have Whirl Away in 41, Count Fleet in 43, and Assault in 46, and finally Citation in 1948. So basically, everybody sort of lulls themselves to sleep here because it seems like it's happening every few years and it's not quite like as elusive as everybody thought it would be. But then here's the deal. It takes 25 years until 1973 when Secretariat comes along and kills it and also holds the records for fastest time in all three races still today.
That's crazy. But that is probably why there was a movie made about Secretariat.
About Secretariat. Oh, my God. No, this horse was unbelievable. Yes, we could do a whole podcast episode on Secretariat. I love Secretariat. Anyway. So then we have back-to-backs in 1977, Seattle Slough, and 1978, Affirmed. Then we go another 37 years until American Pharoah does it in 2015. Finally, like, in my lifetime anyway. Well, like, in my lifetime that I can remember.
I remember you had, like, a big moment
yes.
when this happened.
No, it was huge. This wasn't even that long ago. And then Justify does it in 2018. And now we're on a six-year gap since that time. So saddle up, dudes.
Better
Here we go.
Out.
And I'm thinking 150th anniversary, maybe this year. It would be awesome. But how cool would that be if it happened on the 150th anniversary since the Kentucky Derby started? That'd be awesome.
I love it. But you know what else I love?
What?
Fun facts.
Fun facts. Oh, it's fun fact time.
I love it. It's my favorite part of the podcast.
Let's go. We got to do fun facts. All right. Fun fact number one. We know that Sir Barton was the first Triple Crown winner in 1919, even though they like awarded him the honor later. But what you didn't know, I bet, is that they only entered him in the Kentucky Derby as a pacehorse for his stablemate, named Billy Kelly, and he ended up winning it by 5 lengths.
Okay, don't forget, still getting sort of sophisticated over here. What's a length?
Length is a length of a horse, like from nose to tail. Right. So here's the deal. So he's hanging out with his buddy, Billy Kelly. They're running this race, and he's like pacing the guy. And the jockey in front, supposed to be like, Sir Barton's in front. Okay, we're pacing. And then Billy Kelly's supposed to like take over the race. And he doesn't. And Sir Barton's like, fuck yo, mama. I'm going to just finish this thing. Heck, kills him. It was crazy. All right. Anyway, then he went on to win the other two races, of course, and the rest is history. So that's sort of Sir Barton. He's sort of iconic now. Fun fact, too, there have only been 13 Triple Crown winners. We already talked about those. But 19 other horses have won the first and second leg of the Triple Crown, but then lost at Belmont.
That's really tragic.
Totally tragic, right? You go that far, but that's the whole point of that. That's why it's so complicated. Most of these occurred during that 37-year gap from Seattle Slough to American Pharoah.
That's probably what makes horse racing so interesting.
Yes.
Because everything's super close.
Yeah, totally. Right, absolutely.
Even
makes
when
it super
like
fun.
This
and this is the whole lure of the Triple Crown. Absolutely. You're getting into it here. You're buying into this here. I love it, Amanda.
I am.
All right. Number three, there were 7 years when it was impossible to even have a Triple Crown winner. In 1890, the Belmont and the Preakness were held on the same day, so kind of impossible because they didn't have like cloning back then yet anyway. And they didn't even coin the term Triple Crown yet. And then in 1917 and 1922, the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness were on the same day, so didn't work again. And finally, the Preakness wasn't even held between 1891 and 1893. And the Belmont was canceled in 1911 and 1912 after New York State passed this anti-gambling law that outlawed horse racing altogether. So another little fun fact about that. During that time, when horse racing was suspended at Belmont Park, the Wright brothers brought airplane races to the track for a 10-day event in October of 1910 where they raced airplanes to the Statue of Liberty and back.
And why did they stop that? Like, that just adds a ton.
That is better. I would argue safety regulations or something. But I would... How cool would it be to be sitting at a racetrack, watch airplanes take off, buzz around Statue of Liberty, come back? I would be drunk all day long watching that. That would be totally fun. Airplane races.
Amazing.
Love it. Yeah, I know. All right. Number four, no filly or no girl horse has ever won the Triple Crown. The closest was Genuine Risk in 1980, who won the Kentucky Derby, but came in second in both the Preakness and the Belmont Stakes.
All right. So no girls have won, but how many ballless horses have won?
So I looked that up. No ballless horses have ever won. Only colts have won. Only bald horses have won. So I don't know why geldings would be even like, maybe there's owners or trainers that think like, oh yeah, my gelding's going to win. But I would argue if you're trying to chill out a horse and you got to cut their balls off, then you're sort of like, well, you're done. Right. I don't think so. So anyway, no ballless horses. They're O for whatever. All right. Fifth and last fun fact. No horse was faster than Secretariat. On June 9th, 1973, Secretariat didn't just become the first horse in 25 years to win the Triple Crown. He may also have blazed the single greatest performance in horse racing history. After winning the Kentucky Derby in sub 2 minutes, which still stands as a record today, Big Red, as he's known by his fans, Big Red, set a world record at the Preakness of 153 and then killed the Belmont a mile and a half distance on a dirt track at 2 minutes and 24 seconds. Also, the record still stands. He won that race by 31 horse lengths.
That's
31.
Incredible.
You have to watch.
That's
if you
massive.
Go find it on TikTok. It is absolutely amazing. You get chills. You don't even have to like horse racing. And you watch this thing, this guy pull away. I forgot. I think it was Sham he was racing against. And when he pulls away and the announcer goes off on this horse, it is surreal. It's amazing to watch.
And that's why he will forever go down in history.
He will forever go down in history as the best horse and the only non-human on ESPN's 100 Greatest Athletes of the 20th Century.
What a stud.
Total stud.
Get
absolutely.
It?
I missed it, but I thought that was hysterical. That was good. He's a total stud. Yes.
But then what was the closest margin of victory to win the Triple Crown?
Oh, closest margin of victory. Yeah. Closest margin of victory was affirmed in 1978. I think he won by a nose, maybe a head.
Isn't that technically the same thing on a horse?
The nose and the head?
The nose is on the head.
Yeah, I guess the nose is the head.
But is it just like a nose? Is it just like a little sliver?
The nose is probably that first nostril part, the big-ass nostril part. That's considered the nose. The head is like probably all the way back to like their ears.
Okay.
It was a really close race.
Super
yes,
close.
Absolutely. Yeah, either way. All right. So there you go, folks. That's all we got for today. The Triple Crown, where horses run faster than cheetahs with a caffeine addiction. Jockeys cling on for dear life like they're riding a roller coaster without a seatbelt. And spectators bet their life savings on horses named Lucky Charm or Effluvium. Well, because they're just feeling lucky.
Wait. What happened to Maximum Security?
Who's Maximum Security?
You mentioned it at the beginning of the podcast. Something.
Oh, in the teaser.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, crap. Okay. Yeah, he lost.
He
got disqualified for interference. Tape recording show he pushed out in the lane in front of another horse, so he was totally disqualified.
That's sad. Did he ever get a race again?
No. He pretty much is just a drunk old horse now having sex with a bunch of girl horses for money. That is all they do. They just go have sex for money.
They continue to go make money for their owners.
Yeah, for clarity, you win the Triple Crown, you make some money. You win the Triple Crown, you become a stud horse, you make a ridiculous amount of money. So Michael Jordan, right? Oh, my God, I got a contract with the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan made his money because of freaking Nike, right? Yeah, so this is the same thing.
All right. So this was fun and all, but sum it up for me here. What do I need to do and what should I remember from this podcast that would make me sort of sophisticated to my fellow humans?
Everything, but you won't. I know how you work. You have a very short-term memory, so...
Bullet it.
We're going to bullet it. We're going to break it down. First, mark your calendars. First weekend in May, watch the Kentucky Derby at...
Churchill Downs.
Good. Second, at your next party, after you've introduced yourself to somebody, ask them what sports they like to watch, and of course, listen and pretend to care. Third, tell them you've been fascinated recently with the Triple Crown because you were listening to this really cool podcast and that you are watching all the races this season.
But just make sure it's sometime between April and June so you seem knowledgeable.
Oh, you look like an idiot otherwise. You do all this right. In December, you look like a dummy. No. Yeah. Absolutely. You got to do it between April and June. Then finally, share these interesting and relevant details to seem, well, sort of sophisticated. The Triple Crown didn't ever really start. Some dude just coined the term in the 1930s, and it sort of grew from there. Two, the races run from the first weekend in May to the first or second Saturday in June. The Kentucky Derby is first, the Preakness is second 2 weeks later, and the last is the Belmont Stakes. Three, Secretariat was, in 1973, the most dominant horse in Triple Crown history and still holds every record today. Four, there's only been 13 winners. The most recent was Justify in 2018, and we are 6 years and waiting. Number five, people memorize the drinks. The Mint Julep for the Kentucky Derby, the Black Eyed Susan for the Preakness, and the Belmont Jewel for the Belmont Stakes. And finally, no girl horse has ever won, so it's going to be really cool when it finally happens.
And there you have it, dear listeners. Thank you for riding along with us while we learned all about the Triple Crown. We like to think we've shared just enough information to make you either a flaming nuisance or a little more sophisticated to your fellow humans. Sort of. Until next time, keep your hats on tight, your bets wild, and may your horseshoes always be made of solid gold. Giddy up and see you at the winner's circle. If you enjoyed this episode and found it particularly interesting, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and share with your peeps. Until next time, stay curious and stay inspired.